starting August 1st, listen to our five-part series. Attorney Robert Kirsch shares facts from inside the prison walls of Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Heard only here, exclusively.
You can talk about Guantanamo Bay almost anywhere in the world now, and people picture men in orange jumpsuits. That's what we see. Guantanamo, for better or for worse, has become a somewhat of a stain on the record, the human rights record of the United States. And it's part of what we have to deal with at this point. And it's been used as a recruiting tool by different elements, whether it's Al-Qaeda or ISIS. And our clients were among the people who had come to that part of the world because there were lots of kids who had no fathers anymore, lots of families who'd been destroyed. They were there doing service work. A couple of them worked for the Red Cross. One of them trained people in self-defense and did computer repair work. One of them was a teacher. They did a variety of things, but they had been in Bosnia at the time. They were in Bosnia on September 11th. They were in Bosnia in October when the United States said it wanted to seize them.
Followed by a happy ending about Cuba's tropical historic paradise. Don't miss it.
Hola amigos, this is Don Alejandro de la Vega. Welcome to Tropical Paradise Waits. Do you ever dream of living in paradise? Dream no more, my friend. If you are planning on living in the tropics, or if you are a full-on expat, this show is the show for you. Listen and learn how to make the best of your leisure time. It takes more than a plane ticket to fully enjoy the tranquil lifestyle. It is a state of mind. Let's live a better life. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Positive reviews help us rise up the ranks. Please scroll down and click support this podcast. Gracias, and enjoy the show.
Do you want to live your life in paradise? Sure you do. Listen and discover. Tropical Paradise Waits for you. Download the Anchor mobile app and search Tropical Paradise Waits. Then tap voice message. Send this message. Or if you like, you can email me direct at francogringo13@gmail.com. All lowercase, FRANCOGRINGO13@gmail. You tired of paying those high cable and television bills? You can get a shitload of live channels, including movies and theaters, news and sports from your hometown or anywhere in the world. For a one-time fee with no monthly payments, mention Tropical Paradise Waits and get $20 off a fully loaded Fire Stick. Go to don'tpayfortv.com. Welcome back to the beginning. I'm in my Studio B in beautiful downtown Cabarete, and I'm back here once again for part three of the adventurous ballsy Haitian motorcycle trip. How you doing, boys? Welcome back, and thanks so much for coming.
Hey, Frank. How's it going?
Thanks, Frank.
Starting to feel like a podcast veteran.
So there we were, right? We got a blast out of Port-au-Prince, and our first road out is now blocked by a recently downed lamppost or something with some thuggery looking like we didn't want to go through. So Seth calls the audible. And we navigated.
That was definitely not a sanctioned roadblock. That was a bad roadblock.
It did not look very official at all. Yeah, bit unnerving, but you know
that was the roadblock that your mother warned you about.
Well, we got out of there, and it got noticeably better as we made our way out of the big old city. For many years, there's no actual streetlights in downtown Port-au-Prince. I guess the locals took them down. They didn't like that level of
organization. Oh, you mean like traffic lights?
Traffic lights, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. They apparently tried it once.
Yeah, it didn't go so well.
Just got torn down and used for roadblocks.
Yeah. Well, but the...
I remember when Cabarete got a traffic light. It was chaos for like a year. There's still people I don't think that know how to use it.
And I think at this point we were referring to this as the Mogadishu extraction because we knew it was going to be a bit of a work out to get out of Port-au-Prince.
Back to the Black Hawk Down references.
Yeah, that's right. But it didn't take too long. And once you're out to the north around the airport, things get a lot better. Although you got to admit, those trucks with all the people in the back of them painted up colorful, they're just amazing. I didn't get enough photos of those.
We've lived in the DR for a while, so I thought I was kind of used to seeing crazy things on roads. But I mean, Haiti takes it to the next level, don't they?
It's amazing.
I mean, I didn't think I could be surprised, but I was constantly being surprised.
I think there's a lot of pride put in on those vehicles. Like, there's probably one guy just crushing it on these custom jobs. They look like it looks like the circus.
Oh, you're talking about the paint.
The paint jobs.
I was talking about the cargo, the loads.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've never seen trucks loaded that heavily and that high.
Yeah.
Even here, I've literally put the Dominicans to shame in that regard.
Super high and wobbly. It looks like something out of Dr. Seuss.
Yeah. What stood out to you? What was anything on that day leaving that is a trip highlight?
Well, yeah, when we got within about an hour to the border back to towards Dominican Republic, we came across that lake.
Oh,
first
yeah.
First of all, I mean, the lake itself was scenic. The road runs along it. And there's those horses. There's this scene that you couldn't even believe. It was so out of place.
That was bizarre.
It was these amazing, I guess, limestone cliffs surrounding this pond right on the side of this dirt road opposite the lake. Green water, and these horses just gracefully
grazing
about. So Seth, of course, is like, hold this. Hold my beer. No, hold my camera. He went for a little ride. And that was kind of cool. It was just, I mean, it was just magical.
It was like an oasis. Like the landscape around it was very barren. And for some reason, there's this little pocket with water and horses of all things. It looked like some kind of paradise painting. It's yeah. Really strange.
But, you know, to your question, what I remember that day, it's how amazing Haiti gets scenery-wise outside of the big city.
Like 30 minutes outside of the city.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Like a complete contrast.
Yeah. Things get a little happier, a few more smiles. Although when I took a picture
greener, I mean, just like the temperature drops, things get,
yeah,
the things get more lush. It just starts looking like the DR.
Yeah. Dirt roads, potholed roads. So you never really go too fast. I mean, in fact, trip planning, I mean, you know,
complete wag.
Yeah. Like if we're going from point A to point B, I like to kind of know, you know, is it going to be 6 hours or 8 or 10? And you often say, well, you know, factor everything in loaded time, you probably average out 30 kilometers an hour. Well, in Haiti, it was more like 10 or 15, wasn't it?
We got along pretty well on this trip. That was just one of those reoccurring things that used to drive me crazy, Glenn. Glenn, he's a math guy, and he just insisted on trying to come up with some kind of Glenn algorithm to plan out the next day's ride based on what Google Maps was telling him between point C and D, because yesterday, when we rode from A to B, Google Maps said 4 hours and it took us 6. So therefore, we need to add 2 hours to today's trip, whatever Google Maps tells us. And I was constantly like, Glenn, these two things are not correlated. We have no idea what tomorrow's going to be like. It's like,
are you
just because the roulette table hit red 5 times in a row, the odds are still 50-50 on the next spin.
I think what you're hearing here is Seth fell in love with a phone app called Rever. And it's specialized for motorbike travel. And there were some Haiti routes for sure. And yeah, and that's, you know, let's be honest, that helped us a few times as well. Yeah, that's not exactly a ringing endorsement for Google Maps.
You know what stood out to me that day was, I just remember riding past, you know, you getting absorbed into the scenery and stuff. Two things. One was, I don't think there's running water or plumbing anywhere. Remember, everybody seemed to go to a communal well, one of these like hand pumping things, and yeah, there would be lineups. And then everywhere else, even if you didn't see the well, there was people packing around buckets on their head everywhere. Yeah,
yeah. Well, even in Malo on that first night, we were sitting there, feet up, having a nice roadside beer, checking out the local goings on, and we kept seeing young girls and ladies walking into this secret door and coming out with a bucket on their
head.
That's right.
Secret
door. It was a secret water well, and it's behind closed doors. It's not out in the street like it is in most communities. And we thought that was pretty funny.
But how about, I mean, how do I got to be careful, but some of the women that we saw with a 5-gallon bucket of water on their head walking back to wherever they lived, hauling water, were like A-list supermodels in any other country. I mean, especially I noticed up in the hills, like when we were in the mountain away from the cities, we saw fantastically beautiful people.
You did? I'm married, so I didn't actually know you, but no, you're right. You're right. Especially when they smile, right? I mean, friendliness and smile goes a long way, but in big, right? Like shoulders, muscles, pack that water.
Yeah.
And like any other sort of country, it's the ladies doing the hard work. Let's be honest.
Frank is pointing to his foot. I'm not sure what he's... Big feet? We're talking about the women, Frank.
So anyway, we roll past this oasis in eastern Haiti, 20 minutes from the border, and that was a tough border. We didn't even know it existed when we set out 5 days earlier.
Right.
But the first stop was a semi-organized Haitian outpost where you get your outbound stamp. And a bunch of Dominican Army guys who want to tear through your bags, which they did.
But before you get to the Dominican side, there is this phenomenon that we experience there whereby on approach to any one of these official buildings, you are absolutely descended upon by hustlers, scavengers, masquerading as officials, asking for your passport and bike papers. Fortunately, we didn't know that. We were totally unaware, and I could easily see somebody being tricked into that. But for whatever reason, we just decided it's safer to push through, get inside of a door. And I mean, while you're doing that, people are yelling at you, telling you you're doing it wrong, you're breaking the law, you can't, and waving little customs cards at you and doing anything they can to look official. You have to just push your way through. And then you get inside and it's like, oh yeah, this is like a normal customs office, and they just don't do anything about
it. Was like the big magical outside. Gate of the Wizard of Oz, wasn't it?
Right.
Kind of lined up. You got buses, school buses, everything's all.
Well, there's like that no man's land between.
It's horrible.
Yeah, there's like the customs immigration on the Haitian side, and then separated from the DR side is like, I don't know, a couple hundred meters enclosed in giant fences and stuff of just like awesome. A melee chaos, jostling, absolute chaos.
And just think, well, if some you're either crossing the border or you're not today, right?
Like, right.
Why all the chaos? Why all the there's hustling and trading and people walking five times this way and that way? You're wondering, like, are you crossing or aren't you? Anyway, we're lined up behind a couple of vehicles trying to get to the giant Dominican Army guys to open up the magical gate into Dominican Republic. And yeah, the fake border officials are clawing at our stuff, and then a truck back.
Those guys those guys were getting aggressive. That guy had both of his hands on my handlebars pushing back, and I was popping the clutch and pushing him back just to actually muscle our way through this crowd.
Is that when the truck backed up in your
time? And then I got backed over by a truck, and this same guy that was moments ago trying to rob me or scam me in some way actually had his hands free to slam on the side of the truck and stop him from moving. Otherwise, I mean, I would have to jump off my bike and just watch it get run over. So, you know,
and then
a little positive.
Don't forget, a few kids just seem to be wandering across the border without
back and forth
any identification. It's just like they're runners or trading currency or something. So there's a lot going on, and it's kind of fun, to be honest.
Without exception, though, every one of those border towns was pretty grubby on both sides. Just near the border is not really a pleasant place.
Yeah. I mean, the search for Pico Polo right after that, I mean, that's when you know you're home free, right?
Yeah, I've never been so happy to cross back into the DR as much as, I mean, we had awesome experiences in Haiti, and I've got a lot of very, very positive things to say about it, but just sort of the hour of that, dealing with that crap on the way back, and the Dominicans guards welcome us back in and the gates close behind us, and suddenly there's like this calm descends upon us. Was very relieving
and clean, right? Remember, yeah, the shock of the streets. Somebody's right. Cleaning up these streets. It's amazing. We just saw 4 days of filth everywhere.
Having said all that, though, like, I mean, our now that we've done it and I had a little experience with the border crossings, other than the heat and the noise and the hassle, really it wasn't that bad. Like, I mean, if you look at it, I don't think we spent more than an hour on either side, did we?
No, time-wise,
getting through.
Time-wise, it's not that inefficient. It's just a lot of
unknowns, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's figuring out the process one time. So if we were to do it again, wink, wink, I think, you know, bypass the city. We've now figured out the route across that does bypass. Goes through the same La Cuenta and the border crossing in the middle that we did. But you can buy, we can bypass
this. What's the name of the town in this? Because we're down, this is just outside of Port-au-Prince now. We're in the south. So if you can imagine, we're on the south side of the island, southern bottom part of the island, crossing the border back into the DR at...
Jimani,
that was it, yeah.
But you know what's surprising, right? Because the next couple days...
Little did we know, some of the most epic riding in the whole trip was still ahead of us.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And Jimani's the place that all starts. So you go up past the lake, and we stayed the night in a nice little town for about, what, 10 bucks a night? What's it called?
Mi Pequeño Hotel,
something
was it?
Something like that. Beautiful... family-run place, loaded up on gear, poured, three, four giant jumbo beer bottles of gasoline into our tanks, and set out. Wait a sec. That was the second time we did that road. Yeah. We set out that morning, started the amazing border
I
trail.
I might know where you're going with this.
2 days dirt riding through the mountains northwards, and you're constantly basically on the Haiti border, but on the Dominican side. And so we went up into the clouds. It was getting cold. It was awesome. We're taking photos. And Seth says, we got to go back. I forgot my passport.
Which I'd cleverly hidden underneath of my mattress, tucked it into a little tear.
But the good news is we got to...
I orchestrated all of that just because the riding was so good. I wanted to do it twice.
The ham and egg empanada.
Oh, right? My God. Those were so good.
Yeah. So we got to do those twice. And when we came back, the clouds had disappeared and we got even better photos of the views. Because let me tell you, that's got to be the best scenery that I've seen in DR. Up high, looking down. We hit, 2,000 feet at one point, right?
Yeah. It was on, no meters.
No. Now it'd be 2,000 feet, mate. Just shy.
Don't make me fact check you. I will.
All right.
I've got it on my Rever app.
Nice plug. But so that was no big deal. And we made it halfway to a town, relaxed, and set out on yet another twisty trail through the mountains. And what looked like kind of a no-brainer afternoon, do you remember? We ended up with all these forks in the road and some heavy machinery. And it was the biggest avocado farm.
Oh, yeah.
It was a government project. It must have just started because they were still building roads and planting avocados as far as the eye could see.
That was a labyrinth. Yes. We literally got lost in an avocado forest.
Yeah. It's true. I've never done an hour motorbike ride in an avocado patch.
And they had security. The security escorted us out. They had a guy on a motorcycle that was running security. I don't know. I guess people... maybe stealing avocados or something, but he accosted us and actually was pretty nice in the end, but he rode in front of us and showed us how to get out of this weird avocado maze.
Yeah. And we arrived in Elias Pina, also on the border. So this was an unknown border crossing. I have to admit,
Elias Pina,
right. In I think the province of Comendador.
Another shitty border town.
Yeah. Well, we never got to see the border though, but we met an interesting English-speaking engineer, Haitian Dominican engineer, right, that gave us the lowdown and what goes on.
Oh, that town wasn't bad. Sorry, I was thinking of that other town where we stayed in the bus station.
Oh, no, that was Elias Pina. You're right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You want to tell us about Elias Pina?
Not really. Town, huh? Yeah, no, I mean, we literally stayed what turned out to be, I thought, not a bad hotel, but it was above a bus station. And that was another one of these situations where we're driving around the town late in the afternoon after having ridden for 9 hours. Ooh. All right.
That sounds like another story.
Yeah. The stories are going to get a lot better now. Hot, sweaty, dusty, saddle sore, looking for a hotel.
Yeah. So the only game in town in Elias Pina was a hotel right above an all-night bus station.
Well, no, there was another game in town, but it was, I think you could pay by the hour.
Yeah, and I remember you asked about whether they put chocolate chip cookies on the pillow at night, and they say, no, senor, and you're like, I'm out of here. So bus station it was, a little loud. I got a good sleep. Thanks for taking the outside room, by the way.
Yeah, no problem. Glenn's very sensitive.
not a good sleeper. So we set out the next day from Elias Pina northwards, right? Hey, and I want to give a big shout out to Bruce Music, eh?
Yeah, I mean, he got us going on this border road in the first place, didn't he?
Yeah, Bruce, if you're listening, thanks for the inspiration. Bruce is the undisputable king of off-road travel, overland motorbike travel, and he put the bug in our heads a year or two ago and told us about these epic border roads, and boy, he wasn't exaggerating. They really are a fun ride.
That was so good. I would recommend that to anybody, any rider, any enthusiast. That road,
yeah,
that's world class.
So good. In fact, well, when we set up the morning from Elias Pina, do you remember what happened?
No, we ended up back in Haiti, didn't we?
We did. Oh, yeah. There's a jiggity jog.
How did you end up on the navigation job that day?
I don't know, man. I had Google Maps. There wasn't a lot of choices to choose from. You think it's either this road or the empty space that's not a road.
We had some kind of,
this is my logic,
issue that I can't, some kind of bike issue. For whatever reason, we just happened to stop. Friendly old Dominican farmer came wandering over, was telling us about his property and stuff. And while you were resolving your issue, which I can't, what
broken
was
heart, broken hand guard from the avocado.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you put your bike down in the avocado field. You told the passport story. He says, where are you going? I say,
north.
North. I can't remember the name of the town we were trying to head to. And he looked very confused. And I thought it was because of my Spanish. He then proceeded to explain to me that we were a very short distance from Haiti.
Yeah, yeah. The dipsy doodle in the border, we were well into it. So technically we were on the Haiti side. And what we didn't know is for the afternoon, we were about to get into a road that literally is on the Haiti side. We got past all that. It was my bad on the navigation for sure. So Seth's back in front. We had how about that town, eh? Pedro Santana, where we stopped for lunch. This town is off the charts in turn of...
Was that the clean one?
Yes.
That was weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like we're sure the president is from that town and he's just got it spick and span. Double lanes.
Something for sure. Incredible. I mean, all the roads were painted properly. The signs were all up. Everything worked. There was no garbage anywhere. There was garbage cans all over the place. There was a beautiful park in the middle.
Yeah.
Like, it was weird.
It was neat. But that's the beginning of the road that runs through a canyon along the river. And that river is effectively the border for several hours. And so you actually have to get a permit from the police. That was fun. And ride up through switchbacks, up through a canyon. And amazing afternoon ride that I guarantee you, if this road that afternoon, it was my favorite of the whole trip. If that road were in North America or Europe, it would be a permitted ride with a wait list. I mean, it is epic riding and
kind of had that Moab feel to it for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dry and like, the road cut right into the side of the valley, massive drops beneath you, big towering mountains above you. It was cool.
Yeah. And we stopped, there was a couple guys on a local bike that were having flat tire issues, and Captain Seth had a little electric pump. So three times on that route, we stopped and inflated them back up, scrambled to get our stuff, hoping to pass them further up the road before the air went out. But then
extended our afternoon by about 2 hours trying to do that good deed.
Good memories, though.
Just no good deed unpunished. That just went on and on and on.
But the best part in those situations, right, is when the kids come out of nowhere. You're in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, you got a great photo of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the kids, and they just come out. Where are they? Are they down? They're down the slope somewhere in the canyon and they just come up.
Sort of emerge out of the trees.
They either got million-dollar smiles. If you notice that photo with me and those seven kids, there's only six you can see. There's always one hiding behind someone else, right?
That was where were we? Haiti or?
We're just coming into Restoration at the end of the
road. But on the road, were those Haitian kids or Dominican kids?
They would have been Haitian kids, yeah. No.
A lot of the Haitian kids wouldn't. And adults, for that matter, were very shy around the camera. It was like a voodoo soul-stealing thing.
All I know is I thought we'd be back and forth across the border a little from what little research we'd read, but it's all on the Haiti side. And then you pop out and through some pretty rough Dominican mountain villages, and then into Restauracion. And really, that's the end of the fun riding. It's a nice town too, Restauracion. I hope I'm pronouncing it correct. But that's kind of like, oh, those last 2 days were just absolutely epic riding.
Totally.
You just want to keep going. You kind of want to turn around and just do it again in the opposite direction.
I don't know. You didn't have such a good morning on our last day, but I, those first, whatever that was, 4 hours on that last day, I thought was incredible. It was definitely the hardest, most technical riding we did, but.
Wow, you skipped the whole day. You want to do that?
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
You've got the map.
Oh, here you go.
Glenn's navigating again.
Well, you got to admit though, that was, so day eight was a bit boring, wasn't it? We found a nice place to swim.
Oh, that was mostly roads, right?
Yeah. And yeah. You know, every time you see on the opportunity on the map to do some dirt over a mountain and it might cut down some time or at least be more interesting, we took it. But a few of those.
That's probably why I forgot about that day. It was just boring riding.
It's boring. Yeah. I mean, driving back is not that exciting. You're just, it's a lot of pavement. There's a few dirt roads, a few swimming holes. And then, we made the agreement that on the last day we were going to chip our way behind Puerto Plata, right?
We were in the 27 Waterfalls area, Demagua.
Yeah, Demajagua.
I think the J is silent. Sounds like a huh.
What's up?
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off because I'm really curious about this next point you're about to make. What was the agreement that we made again, Glenn?
We were going to get back and complete the loop full circle without ever doing the same road twice.
No. Well, shouldn't say no, sorry, but the...
We wanted to avoid Puerto Plata and all its crappy freeway traffic.
I think more specifically is we were not going to touch Highway 5.
Yes. Absolutely. So we set out on... I think we had a couple options to get up to El Coupe in behind Mount Isabella, where the where the gondola is. But we took the one that had 5 water crossings, serious incline, chunky chunk, and my bike was just starting to fall apart. Plus, I'm not a big fan of the chunky chunk.
It got really technical.
It was ugly. I mean, I was falling off. I was smashing stuff. I was leaking oil. My electrics kind of went wonky. Oh, and I cracked my front sprocket case. The whole cover
broke, it
smashed
right
and came off. It brought that back in the backpack. But
have you had your engine casing looked at yet?
I haven't even sat on the bike since I got home.
Make sure you don't start it. It's going to be empty of oil now because it was.
Good point. Good thing I drove here. But yeah, that was some technical stuff. So for local riders that are listening in the Cabaretti area, you probably already know, but Demajagua in behind Isabella, that's a pretty epic technical ride. And as things got closer and closer back to Sosua, we decided to say farewell up at the wonderful Eco Lodge about 20 minutes off Highway 5. We had a farewell beer, met the folks that run that place, and I had a family to get back to. I wanted to see my kid while she was still at my friend's place over by the lagoon in Kite Beach. And Seth, the stubborn ship captain that he is, said, "Dude, I'm going to complete this journey all back road." So he ended up, well, you tell us, Seth, what'd you do from there after we said goodbye?
It was a ride we've done a bunch. So, I mean, I give you a lot of shit about this, probably rightfully so, but I wouldn't have necessarily made any different decisions if I was you. Certainly would have preferred to go see my family than spend any more time with me after 9 days on the bike. But
well, not to mention my bike was falling apart.
I wasn't falling apart that much. Now I pressed on. We did. I just completed the circuit off of Highway 5, and I did the, we call the Joey Tomato Run, the Polo Field Run. It's that circuit. Came out in whatchamacallit, Jamagua, and dropped down that road and circled back from the east side of Cabarete. Did my victory lap at OP1, where I found you. You'd probably been home for a couple hours by that point. And we rode the bikes right out on the lawn, got some, had another victory beer, got some good photos.
That was a good trip, man.
That was awesome.
There's not too many people. There's probably 3 people I know. Well, 4 if you include Bruce, but you, Bruce, my wife, Sheila, she's an epic rider. We obviously with kids, we can't do that together. And, my buddy, Chris up in Vancouver, I think, you know, I can count on one hand, the people I would do that trip with. And, you're definitely one of them, man. That was epic. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, I agree. It was, And you know what? Thanks, Frank. This has been really fun because actually Glenn and I are not friends anymore. We don't speak to each other since the trip. So this podcast has given us a chance to hash out this trip day by day and sort of relive some of these memories, which, like I said, we haven't done since we've been back. We just sort of life took over and we got busy. So sitting here having a beer, talking shit about our Haiti trip has been really fun for me.
Let's do it again.
Yeah, man.
There you have it. Glenn and Seth's voodoo sanctioned motorcycle trip. If this sounds interesting to you, just contact me and I'm sure the guys would be more than happy to guide you through it. It sounds interesting to me. They just showed me a short route that's all pavement that I might like because my motorcycle, they have enduros. Mine's a street bike. And I'm definitely going to take them up on that and take this trip over there. I was always afraid to go to Haiti by myself. I always felt that I would need a Haitian guide. But at least if I don't have a Haitian guide, I'll bring some big dude with me.
Like Seth.
Yeah, like Seth.
Just don't let Glenn navigate.
Thank you from Voodoo Sanction. See you. Hey, stay with us. We'll be back.
Bye-bye.
Are beyond the middle ground. Thank you, Cabaretti Horn Section, for letting me record that little intro. That's Josh, Horace, Wolfgang, and Miguel. Thanks, guys. Believe it or not, I recorded that on my iPhone. If you're still with us, something kept you. So if you like what you are hearing, help us by spreading the word. Send our link to all your contacts and Facebook friends. Ask them to follow us, subscribe, then leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast. That's the only way we will rise up in the ranks. If you don't do it, nobody will. Send yourself a reminder for every Sunday. Add us to your Sunday routine. Give the dog a bath. Watch 60 Minutes. Take your mom to church. Wash your car. Have a barbecue. Plant a garden and listen to the new Tropical Paradise Waits. Tap follow us, then scroll down and click support this podcast. If you are listening on a treadmill, walking, running, ice skating, riding your bike, skateboarding, rollerblading, rock climbing, cleaning your house, walking the dog, good accomplishment. If you just sat and listened, you may have wasted perfectly good time listening to shit you could care less about. So meet us halfway and share your interest. Tell us what you want to hear. Use your superpowers and download the Anchor mobile app. Then search Tropical Paradise Waits. Tap voice message. Send this message. You can just leave a message or be live on the air. If you have something to say, let us know. And we will set up a phone interview for a future date and play it on a future show. If you'd like to email me, feel free, francogringo13@gmail.com, francogringo13@gmail.com. That's all lowercase. Or you can visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/tropicalparadisewaits. Or simply Google us. We're at the top of Google. Tropical Paradise Waits is presented by Elusive Media. New shows launch every Sunday. I look forward to hearing you listen. We're not licensed to use published music, so this gives us the opportunity to go out with local undiscovered talent and gives you the opportunity to discover it. Please enjoy the talent of Jacomel Ram from Haiti. And you can listen live in its entirety after the credits. Thank you. See you next week.
Today's credits are as follows. Thank you to our program director,
Don Alejandro de la Vega.
Our editor and fact checker,
they'll never know.
Our chairperson,
Wilma Buttfit.
Fleet managers,
Lisa Carr.
Our charm consultant today is
the always charming Miss Inga Tooth.
Tiki Bar reviews by
Hassan Ben Sober.
Our favorite divorce attorney,
Carmine, not yours.
Our credit counselor is
Max Stout.
And our fashion designer today,
Hugh Jass.
And of course, our download counter,
Adam Ilion.
If you enjoyed the show, help us continue by scrolling down and clicking support for this podcast.